We've been married for 15, 16 years. So my kids, which are 14 and 10, he's been there throughout as a constant in their lives. And we've obviously announced it to them 24 hours ago. And my son in particular was absolutely devastated. But dogs do a lot more than just give you love, right? They bring you together. So as a family, they force you to go out in every weather, in every condition. They strengthen relationships. They strengthen trust. They do a lot more than just be a companion. What he's brought to our lives in that time has been significant, and he's helped when, you know, we have been grieving or struggling with other mental issues or things going on in our lives or breakdowns or whatever we've been through at different times. Welcome to the Mindful Paths podcast with Nick Day and Harry Kalymnios, where we explore the fascinating world of mindset, mindfulness, fitness, well-being, vitality, leadership, and of course, personal development.
Our goal is to provide you with insights to help you live a more fulfilling, happier, and healthier life.
So if you're striving to be a better parent, friend, leader, colleague, or boss, or if you simply want to be more mindful and aware of the world around you, then this Mindful Paths podcast is going to be for you.
We invite you to eavesdrop on our conversations, and we challenge you to discover a new insight to help you on your own journey towards personal growth and positive change.
So sit back,
relax, and let's begin our journey together
on the Mindful Paths podcast.
Good afternoon, Nick. How are you doing?
I'm all right, mate. I'm all right. I know our listeners today are going to be expecting us, if they heard our last show, to be talking about gut health and microbiomes and all those things. For full transparency, I contacted Harry earlier and said, not sure I can talk about it today. It's just not on my head. And I'll tell you for the reason why. And I might get emotional. All right. But I've been emotional. Hopefully I've had enough sweaty eyes already that I don't need it today. But if it comes, it comes. Sadly, after 16 and a half years, tomorrow morning, we're going to be putting down our dog, Buster, who has been by my side for most of my married life. God, I promise I'll get emotional now. So yeah, it's a tricky one. It's a decision we have to make. So it's hard. I know for those people that aren't dog owners, they may think this is, you know, I don't know, tough, but this show is all about me and Harry when we got together, having a conversation, real conversations about things we talk about when we meet in the pub or we meet in a restaurant. And if I met with Harry now in that environment, it's kind of the only thing I'd be open, you know, be able to talk about. I certainly can't get my headspace in the world of microbiomes at the moment, knowing what's coming tomorrow morning. So I thought, actually, let's share it. Let's crack on with the recording as we always do and share what's going on, because actually he's brought so much into my life. And I'm sure many other people that have pets, like companionship, and what pets bring you. And as far as I'm concerned, he's part of our family, right? So I thought, let's talk about that, because I think pets are amazing for mindfulness. I know when you take on a dog, this is what you sign up for. And they don't live as long as humans typically. So, you know, you've got to know that you've got to let them go at some point. But
What kind of dog is he again? What kind of dog is he?
He is a cross between a Border Terrier and a Parsons Russell. So we got him since he was a 6 weeks old puppy. All the way from, you've met him obviously several times yourself when you've come to visit, right? He's the life and soul of the party.
And so did you get him just after you were married or just before?
Yeah, no, just after. First dog. It's kind of the thing for me that delayed the kids. Special bond from him from day one.
Was he your first ever dog, or did you have a dog as a child?
No, I grew up with dogs. It was my first dog for Lucy though, my wife. And she is, there's no other words, but she's absolutely devastated. He's been her rock when we've gone through things as a family, right? So we've been through miscarriage, as I'm sure other people have. It's tricky. We've been through the trials and tribulations of things that you just come across in life, and he's always been the rock that's looked after my wife in those moments and myself. And you know, no matter what you go on in the day, one of the beautiful things in terms of mindfulness, when you get home from a challenging day, they don't care about what you look like, what car you have, whether you've had a good day, bad day. The best part of their day is seeing you when you come in the front door. And certainly when I used to live in Kent and work in St. Albans, which was a 70-mile commute every single day, you know, and I'd come in, I'd be in traffic, sometimes through the Dartford Tunnel, 2-3 hours, and he'd be the first thing I saw. And it was always that thing of, you know what, he was just always happy to see you. So, it's going to be a really, really tough morning tomorrow. Something we had taken a lot of deliberation over in a short space of time, but we want to do what's right for him.
I was unclear. I was explaining to my mum earlier that we're going to probably have this kind of conversation, or maybe to my brother-in-law,
But is it just age and everything's basically deteriorating, or was there some specific thing that's happening? Or
I think in dog years, he's like 99 years old anyway, right? He's a pensioner in dog terms, and he's done really well at 16 and a half. But look, within a space of a week, maybe 10 days, he's gone from going on a nice walk with a friend of mine, came down to see me 2 weekends ago, and he was on a nice long dog walk. But sitting in a space of 2 weeks, he's no longer got any use of his back legs. They've completely given up. So we have to pick him up and move him to the point now where, he can't even hold himself up to go to the loo. So he needs us to hold his back legs up, or he ends up defecating himself. The last 48 hours, he's become incontinent in the house. Can't be left alone. He just cries and howls if we leave him out of our sight. His vision and hearing went quite a while ago anyway. Not completely, but it's very limited. So he's got a really good sense of smell. He's still got his appetite. We went to the vet, obviously. They've given him some pain relief, but ultimately he's not going to get any better. He's got his quality of life now is limited in terms of sensory experience. He can't walk himself. He can barely see, barely hear. And now the incontinent things come in as well. And the fact we can't leave him alone, I just think it's as heartbreaking as it is to see him. I think it's the right decision.
Best thing to do. I don't know what a week is in dog years, but I guess if 16 years is 99 years, then I guess it's like five times as many or six times as many. So a week would be like 6 weeks or 8 weeks for a human, let's say. Let's say it's 2 months, right, for a human. Actually, I think if I could go to, well, I'm obviously shooting for more than 99, but if I went to like 100 years old or so, and it was only the last two or three months that there was deterioration in my health, that would be a huge win to me. The challenge that most of society has is we're not technically living longer, we're dying longer, and we tend to, that the life quality degrades at 60, maybe for some people, 65, and then they've got 15, possibly 20 years of degradation. I think by the sounds of it, Buster has gone, to like 80, 85 years old, maybe 90 years old, even not longer, before he degraded.
Sure, he's been in pretty good health all the way through, and he's lived like a king, to be fair. Certainly in our household,
love and attention is what's going to keep him alive, right? And that's because he must feel loved, right? And this is for all sentient beings, I think, right? If they feel love and community and connection with people, they're going to want to carry on for longer, right? Why would they want to go?
Yeah, and it's reciprocated, right? I mean, there's lots of studies out there that talk about the release of oxytocin in the bloodstream, which can be hijacked as much by pets as it can by a partner, right? So, it's shared. Humans get a response, certainly we do, when we see him and you're happy. And he's been out running, he's run a full marathon with me. We used to go running every single day, and he's been part of my training regime and part of our, but they do lots more than that. And I'm conscious for our listeners that we've talked a lot about loss because of course of your news, Christmas Eve. I don't want to compare a parent with a dog, that would be unfair, but even so, there's that we're talking about, loss again that's coming, and then we still got the death situation.
I was looking at your text earlier because I was thinking, obviously it's going to come up, my dad and then obviously your dad has got a situation going on. But then the words that you said, because you said 16 and a half years by my side, because even with a parent, it's never to take anything away from like your connection or my connection with my dad, right? But you're not with them 24/7. Like a dog, you're not 24/7, but pretty close. And like you say, they are there and they're just happy to see you all the time. I've never owned a dog. I've really wanted one. I actually watched a movie the other day. I was thinking about you, which is why it was on my mind a couple of days ago. So a dodgy Amazon original called Puppy Love. And effectively two strangers, one kind of adopts a dog that's a stray. The other one has got this anxiety and mental health issues and depression and like social agoraphobia or whatever. And so he's recommended by his therapist to get a dog. So he gets a dog from the shelter. And like even me just watching it, I like dogs are so cute, right, on their faces. And I was like, I could see the connection that he's developed. I was actually looking forward to a friend of mine coming down at the weekend. Unfortunately, he got ill, so he couldn't come. But he's got a cockapoo, like Leo, who, obviously same name as your son. But like, He's, I don't know if you've met my mate Dasos, Greek guy, but he was at one of the parties. I think they might have bought the dog that day, actually. My 39th, I think they just got it that day. It was like a few hours old or a few days old. But Leo's now obviously 5 or 6 years old and very cute dog. And I was thinking about this, and the words that you said to me a few weeks ago have really resonated with me, and I keep saying them over and over to myself. And that's, I think it was along the lines of, grief is the price we pay for love. Is that right? Did you say something like that? And I was really thinking about it because I feel like, on some level, I haven't been willing to do that in my personal life, because, you know, there is heartbreak, you know, from previous relationships, there is loss. But I keep going back to that phrase that you say, grief is the price we pay for love. And if you're not willing to endure that grief, as horrible as it is, you don't get to enjoy the flip side of it as well.
I think it was actually a quote initially, I think it was the Queen that first said it. Don't quote me on that. I'm pretty sure it was actually hers. But look, from my perspective with Buster, without, you know, people who don't listening to this who don't know him might find it strange, but, you know, I've been married been with my partner for 21 years. We've been married for 15, 16 years. So my kids, which are 14 and 10, he's been there throughout as a constant in their lives. And we've obviously announced it to them 24 hours ago. And my son in particular was absolutely devastated. Well, they both were, but he was, you know, visually devastated. But I remember, you know, the first time we brought Eva home in a car seat, as you've got to do, we put her on the floor in the living room in there when we lived in, and the first thing he did, and you're not quite sure how dog's going to react to kids, you know, they're going to understand it's a human, we've got to make sure we've got safety and all those kind of things. First thing he did is he got a tennis ball, dropped it at her feet in the car seat and just looked at her, waiting for her to throw it. And it's just like, they've been good companions ever since. But dogs do a lot more than just give you love, right? They bring you together. So as a family, they force you to go out in every weather, in every condition. They strengthen relationships. They strengthen trust. They do a lot more than just be a companion. I mean, I guess it's all part of what companionship is potentially, but what he's brought to our lives in that time has been significant. And he's helped when, you know, we have been grieving or struggling with other mental issues or things going on in our lives or breakdowns or whatever we've been through at different times. It's kind of they're always non-judgmental and always there as a constant. So I think to take that constant away in what's been almost half my life, that's the weird thing. He's been in it, as you say, every single day I'm seeing him and speaking with him and, you know, cuddling up in the evening. So it's good. He's going to leave a big hole in our family unit.
I remember he was so active when I came and stayed. I think it was 2018 when I was there. But I remember that's when I was getting the idea for the automatic ball drop thing. I think you were on the porch or whatever it was, and you kept throwing it out. And I was like, what? Like, we must just invent something. Like, it brings the ball back, like, drops it, and it throws itself. So, because you're throwing it all the time. But obviously, it wouldn't even be the same for Buster, because, you know, part of it is this reward and love that you're getting, that he's getting from the person throwing the ball, rather than it's not the same. It's like going and playing tennis with a friend versus, you know, hitting it against the wall all the time to try and get better at tennis. It's not the same thing. Although I do somewhat think that dog owners do deserve medals to some degree, because I do see them all the time. They're throwing the balls. Like you say, you've got to go and walk the dog in any weather, which is why another reason why dog owners tend to be healthier, because they are having to walk, rain, sunshine.
So they encourage shared responsibility as well. So, you know, without that, our kids wouldn't have the same level of understanding of what that shared responsibility is. And obviously we've got a second dog now, which was very much purchased to ease this point as it's come. We thought this might have happened a year ago. We're now at that point now. And he's booked in for tomorrow morning. But I think he's helped with my kids' self-confidence. He's helped with shared responsibilities. And actually, talking about stories, I'll share a good one. So this, hopefully, whether you're into dogs or not, will engage the listeners on this bit. It's one of my favorite stories. And it's one, obviously, that involves Buster. And you might know this. But years and years ago, he would have been puppy. We were cage training. So, you know, when you first have them, put him in, you get them used to being in their own space and that kind of whatever. And we were upstairs. It would have been about 3 a.m. in the morning. We used to live in a two-bedroom upstairs, come downstairs, straight into the living room, front door. As you've been there, it was the place we had in Kent. We used to come in straight into the front door. So the first lot of things, small little house. And the layout of the house, which is important, you come in through the front door, straight into the living room, has a bay window. Or you can keep going straight through the living room. And there's like a long hallway that goes into a kitchen, has like almost like a 180 view of the garden, right? This will all be one long hallway. Anyways, 2-3 a.m. in the morning, and we suddenly hear this, and he's in the cage downstairs, puppy. We were talking about a few months old, or maybe, you know, still that early phase. And he just starts going mental. He's like, rah, rah, rah. And I said to Lucy, there's someone, it's about 3 a.m. in the morning. And I said, there's someone in the house. I've got someone in the house. He doesn't do that. You just get that sense that you're listening to your gut, listen to your feelings, right? Tune into that. So I said to Lucy, don't answer the door to anyone but me. Hide behind this little gap between the bed. Hide there. Don't come out to do anything. I'm going to go down and face it. So I walk downstairs. Now, this will be relevant, so I'm going to highlight it. I sleep naked, went down naked into the theme. I come down the stairs and I jump into the living room, try and scare whatever thief, would be burglar, whatever might be there. Like, I make a big noise. There's nothing there. So, okay. But Buster is in the cage and he's going mental. So I open up the cage door and he flies out and goes up against the front door, which is in the living room. And he's up against it. And I'm like, God, whoever has been in our house or someone's just outside that door. So what I'll do is I'll look through the bay window and I'll just see if I can see anything. So I pull back the curtains very, very subtly so I don't disturb anything. And I get faced with the end of a barrel of what appears to be like a submachine gun type weapon, literally facing at my forehead. But they don't know I'm there because I'm crouched down at the bottom of this bay window and they're stood up behind the window, all black. And I was like, I don't know what to do. So reaction kicks in. So I bashed on the window just to scare and frighten them off. And they did. They bolted, gone. They head to the left. And obviously my heart rate now is racing. I've just seen a weapon faced at my, they didn't know, but you know, pointing basically straight at my head. They're outside my front door. And I'm like, boom, boom, boom. The guy's dressed in black and he's gone. He's bolted as soon as I made a noise. Then the dog turns around from the front door and bolts straight through the hallway into the back garden. He's got a little dog flap. Doesn't quite go outside. So his head goes out and he's shaking, really shaking. But he's barking as well. It's protective mode. And he was never a barker before this point. Anyway, he's outside. I thought, well, I'll go in. Whoever's just bolted has obviously gone round the back of the house. And they're now in the back of the garden. Now, I've, in my bad DIY, I've decided to put lights in the garden because I don't have any DIY skills. I literally got a huge drill bit, drilled to both walls of the house and then plugged in the outdoor electrics on the inside of the house and just thread it through. So I thought, what I'll do is I'll illuminate the garden and see whoever's out there to fire them off. So I'm there, stood naked in the middle of my kitchen with 180 views of everything. And I illuminate the garden. I illuminate the entire SWAT team, kid you not, in the back of my garden, in full covert gear, all in black, lying down on my back garden. My dog's going mad. I've got a guy turns around and is like, cut the lights, cut the lights. I was doing the sign language to cut the lights. So I cut them out. Obviously, I'm thinking I'm really, really sorry. He sat there and I've just exposed myself to all of them and all of them to whoever they're trying to covertly go. Grab the dog, go upstairs. By that point, Lucy's been upstairs and spotted all the undercover cars coming out the front of the house. So she knows what's going on, it's police and everywhere else. And we then about an hour and a half, later, we get a knock on the door. And they said, if it wasn't for your dog, you never would have known would have been there. Would have cleaned up, been in, been out, all covert. But he kind of completely exposed us because of the barking. But don't worry, we managed to apprehend the person we were after, which apparently was on the house behind us. And I don't know what obviously didn't give me any details of what that was all about. And he's like, you've got a brilliant guard dog there. And I'm really sorry about the disturbance of that hour in the day. But, you know, had he not been for your dog, we would have been in and out and you'd have been none the wiser. But yeah, there you go. Scary times. I was quite proud of myself for confronting it in my naked stance, knowing, you know, you don't know what's going to be beyond you. You know, got like you get into that family protection mode and you just, you know, you go down. But yeah, that's a fun story.
Scary stuff, having that situation. But, you know, good Buster, you know. So, I mean, I thought many years ago, I think it was 5 or 6 years ago, I wanted to get a dog for, not myself, but really for my dad and for my mum, because I wanted really primarily for him to be forced to like walk. This was maybe like 6, 7, 8 years ago when he was still able to walk a bit more. And you know, they were like, no, I knew they would love a dog once they got one. But because my dad we had a cat when I was growing up, and my dad loved the cat, right, Tom. And we all did so much, but I think he was quite heartbroken when Tom, I don't know, disappeared or got into a fight and died or something like that. He was quite an adventurous cat and he would use often like not shy away from fights with dogs and foxes and things. But I think we never had a pet after that. I think it was a bit of a heartbreak for us all. And we had an adopted cat at one point, Chelsea, who I never liked that much because she was she was just there for the food, right? She like, you know, she was someone else's and she was just there for the food. And my gran gave her loads of love and my dad did as well. But I always thought a dog would be great. And I still contemplating, my niece wants me to get a dog. She's like, get a dog and, you know, we'll look after it when you're not around. And I'm still thinking about that because even though I'm coming and going all the time and I'm in different places, I feel like it would then force like some responsibility on my niece, but also my other nieces would love it. And also my mum would be able to like have company when I'm not around maybe or something like that. So I'm still thinking about it. I still want a Cavapoo or a Cockapoo, something that doesn't shed, something that is quite small that I can carry around and is, you know, needs moderate amount of walking, not too little or too much.
There's a lot of hidden benefits, right, that people, if you're a dog owner, you know, but you don't always reflect. So we do things sometimes or things happen and we don't really sit back and appreciate what they do for us. But, you know, both of us have worked as coaches in the past. I think you've got a client you're seeing later on in your coaching capacity, right? But what a dog does, or a pet does, doesn't have to be a dog, of course, is it allows you to talk more externally from yourself. So we have our voices in our heads, right? But actually, we all know, and if you're involved in a coaching partnership with it, or whatever your coach is, or whatever you're doing, when you say something out loud, it always comes out different or sounds different to how it sounds in your head, and it allows you to work through solutions and things. And when you've got a dog or a pet, it's almost like that social stigma of talking out loud to yourself, which is frowned upon. I know it shouldn't matter, and why we should do it anyway, but the reality is it gives you someone to talk to and something to talk to. And it's almost socially acceptable to talk out loud, and you can work through certain problems. And actually, certainly in the case of dogs, they can show empathy as well. Like they can identify when you're unwell. They can identify when you're, you know, when things are bad, and they'll give you more attention when you're sad than when you're, you know, sometimes. And they can look at that. I mean, if you look at my dad's situation at the moment, he's got a dog called Pip, and Pip won't leave him alone. Like Pip, the dog knows he's unwell. It was absolutely steadfastly by his side and has been every single moment since he started this illness sort of kicked in for him. So, you know, there's some intuition involved there between the two. There's a connection, whether it's the oxytocin piece, whether it's beyond comprehension as to what causes it, but they have an ability to recognize and understand someone else's feelings. And they also give you permission to talk out loud and work through your own problems. And if you're worried about forgiving someone or doing something or whatever it might be, working through something in your head, there's someone you can kind of talk to that actually, because they don't talk back, just listens. And sometimes that's all we need. Go back to the Michael Neal lamppost metaphor. If we all talk to a lamppost 30 minutes a day, it would feel better. I'd prefer to talk to my dog.
Well, I think when you mentioned that, I gave the example, I don't have a dog, obviously, but I do this often sometimes with babies and talk to the babies. And I've always spoken to my nieces from when they were a young age as not adults per se, but like not in that. I've never done a baby voice, or I don't know what those things, you know, sometimes you see on movies where they go through all these baby voices. I've always spoken to them like regular adults. And I remember once I was quite low because I'd had a bit of a there was troubles in the water with my then girlfriend, and that was the cracks were starting to appear. And I remember I went down to Brighton and I saw my niece Nikita, and she was only probably about 6 months old at the time, and I told her the whole story. She was the first person I told about what was going on, and I remember thinking she was always such a happy baby, but then when she came back from that walk and my sister was like, What have you done to her? She's like, she feels better. Because they pick up, like, babies pick up on the energy more than anything. Not so much the voice. But I think we talked about heart math before. I'm big on this idea of heart math and the energy field of the heart, which emanates for about 8 feet outside the body. And when you are in resonance with other people, your heart waves interfere with theirs. And depending on which one has got the stronger emotion, you might adopt their heart waves. And I think that's always the trick I used to give to my sisters when I used to pick up the girls and they would stop crying. I would say, all I do is I focus on the area around my heart. I focus on love, appreciation, gratitude, which brings me into a coherent heart wave, like a nice smooth heart wave. And because you're touching the baby in your physical contact, they pick up on it a lot easier. And so often it can kind of bring them into a sense of calm, provided nothing crazy is wrong with them, like they're hungry or super tired or whatever.
Skin to skin contact for babies is crucial for bonding and for all. I believe in everything you've just said. It makes total sense to me. I think, you know, if you put it back into the context of even a pet or a dog, who knows what they can sense as well. I do know they can sense a lot. I mean, there have been times where the studies and things done where, you know, Labradors and things have sensed when someone's got an illness, or they'll lick your legs and suddenly they've discovered there's been something wrong. And, you know, intuition is only as far as we can understand it. Doesn't mean it's the same for how dogs can. And consciousness is not explained yet by anyone, not fully. It's not fully understood.
Well, dogs have got super hearing, right? Dogs can hear dog whistles, right? Hear things that we don't. Exactly. So why is it unusual to think that they've got other senses that we're not?
And then their sense of smell, certainly for Buster, is phenomenal. But there's also a lot of studies that have said that, certainly in the case of dogs, but other pets as well, I don't want to be exclusive, it's just where my heartbreak is today, but, you know, they do reduce cortisol levels, they do reduce stress, they do lower blood pressure. And if you look at those that have them and those that don't, and the well-being of those individuals, there is a direct correlation to how they feel. And if you're feeling really down, and those that have dogs, you'll know that they'll often come up and just lie on you and just be there when you feel like you needed them without having to ask. And maybe that's that sense, maybe it's that heart math thing you were talking about. I think they're the things we're really, really going to miss.
I think I probably mentioned it in one of the earlier episodes, that study I think I read in one of those books, 59 Seconds or something or other, where they took these stressed out city workers for 8 weeks or 12 weeks, gave them a dog. And then, as you say, they measured cortisol levels, those would all drop, self-reported levels of stress. And at the end of the 8-week study, none of them wanted to give up the dog, and they didn't have to in the end. They were told they had to at the beginning of the study, but then really they didn't want to give it up. And I just find that really, I mean, I don't find it surprising, if I'm honest, at all. The fact that we have to do experiments to show this is what's more surprising. But yeah, I mean, I actually looked into getting a dog a long time ago during lockdown, the first lockdown, you know, lockdown puppies and all that. And I signed up to Battersea Dogs Home and borrowmydoggy.com, which I told my niece to maybe sign up to, where you can have some of the fun, but not the responsibility, like getting the shots and getting them groomed and doing all the things that it's quite a lot of, I mean, I don't know, you obviously know, but it's a lot of work, a lot of responsibility. And this is what scares me a little bit.
Yeah, but sometimes when there's more responsibility involved, I think there's a direct correlation to the value or the way you feel at the end of it. If anything was really easy, you don't get the same feelings. Same even with a baby, right? I know we moan about how much they can cry or keep you sleepless nights and other things, but arguably that's one of the things that bonds us as well, right? Because we go through that struggle. And we understand and appreciate what's at the side of it. I mean, there's been lots of systematic reviews about companionship with pets, particularly for people with mental health conditions. I mean, it's multifaceted in terms of the rewards they can bring. I'm not here trying to promote people to go suddenly going out and get a dog. What I am here to say is I'm going to be absolutely devastated to this time tomorrow when he's no longer with us. And you know that I've been through, as I'm sure most people have, because I'm certainly not exclusive. You go through different areas of times of trauma, and I've been through some trauma about a decade ago. And the fact there was that non-judgmental side to a dog, you know, it was free of judgment, free of all the stuff that alters our view, that we talk about if you're born as a baby without any of the social anxieties and stresses that we grow, and all the subconscious stuff that sticks in there, and all the way that we see the world is impacted by, you know, the media and everything else around us. Dogs don't have that influence in quite the same way. They can just have that non-judgmental, well, you feed me, great. You house me, great. I love you, great. That's it. I'm happy. Are you happy? I'm happy.
I was around a family friend's a few weeks ago in Brighton. I think, I'm not sure if I mentioned or not, but they have a dog. I think her name's Ruby. Quite a big, lively dog. I don't know if I'd met her before or not, but it was the first time around their house in ages anyway. So super excited when a stranger comes and like bouncing around and everything. And then at one point towards the end of the evening, she's on the couch with me, and she's just lying with her little kind of on her back, like just wanting her belly rubbed or something like that. And then, and like my family friend was like, you know, obviously you've got a friend for life here because you're, and she was so happy. And it reminded me of earlier that month, I'd watched, I think there was a movie called Absolutely Anything, and it's where Simon Pegg has the ability to do anything he wants. He's controlled. Some aliens give him the ability of a god basically for a week. But he's got a dog who he wishes can speak. So he ends up having the dog speak. And the dog's voice is Robin Williams. And I know we've talked about Robin Williams as well not that long ago. And, but just rubbing the belly just reminded me of Robin Williams, where he's like, we don't really like our bellies being rubbed. We just do that because we think that you humans like rubbing the belly. And so every time I rub the belly now, I'm thinking of Robin Williams in that movie saying, oh, no, we don't really like it. And it just went to show to me the level of unconditional acceptance and love and, you know, that a dog will give.
And forgiveness as well, right? And forgiveness. That's the thing. You can tell them off and 2 minutes later, they're happy to see you again.
Well, because I think it's all about present moment. Like, because I don't think a lot of animals experience time in the way that we experience time.
No, for sure. You can't tell them after the fact. It's got to be instant if you see something go wrong, for sure.
So it's a bit like children, right? They don't have a concept of time until they're maybe like 4 or 5. And so they're very much present moment awareness. And I know this isn't the topic of the conversation, but I've just started watching a mockumentary documentary on Einstein. I think it's Einstein and the Bomb on Netflix. Yeah, so I'm halfway through at the moment. Obviously, I study physics and quantum physics and special theory of relativity and general theory of relativity. So it's all familiar stuff to me. But one of the things that was really profound for Einstein to postulate and later prove, or other people prove it on his behalf, was this idea of time being very much in the owner's sphere. So like time moves differently for different people. And that just, it just really brings this concept of, I think there's a whole other conversation we're going to have at some point about time and space and what all that means, because I feel like as humans, we create, when Einstein was asked what time is, he said something that clocks measure. And I think that just went to prove that humans have created in a way this concept of time, whereas although time sort of exists, but other animals and babies see things very differently. And this is what, when we talk about mindfulness and we talk about meditation, we talk about breathing. So breathing, often I tell people, is most of our time, our thoughts are going into the future, going into the past, and the breath brings us to the present moment. And I think why dogs are maybe happy and other animals don't have this resentment as much as maybe humans and babies as well, is this idea that they're present moment awareness and they're in the now, as it were. And I know you've just recently been reading Eckhart Tolle as well. And it all comes to the same thing. So even though we're talking about dogs and companionship today, it's actually what we can learn from those dogs about present moment awareness, about being in the moment, about forgiving, about all of this. It's all the same mindful paths.
And celebrating as well, right? So, I mean, it's going to be difficult tomorrow. I'm going to need to call on a lot of those techniques tomorrow when we take it. I've never gone through that before. Grew up with dogs, several dogs growing up, but I was never there when they were put down or anything like that. You know, we just, my dad would take them away and then there we are. To be the owner doing that tomorrow is going to be really difficult, and I'll be calling on that breathing exercises and everything I can, but I'm trying to really stay in that positive mindset of he's had a wonderful life and he's given me so much joy, and celebrate the amazing times I've had with him rather than the loss of the time to come, because 16 and a half years is a really good innings for any dog. And right now, to prolong how he is now, he's not in any space. You know, it's been devastating actually just watching him the last 24 hours. I get emotional again because he's been really, really struggling. So it'll be the right thing for me to do.
It's hard. I think the thing is, you know, when we look at the positive in the situation or the gratitude, and I was talking to my mum today about, I think she was telling me about her cousin. So my cousin, my mum's cousin, he was quite successful in Greece. He lived there a long time. He was some sort of engineer, whatever. He saved up a lot of money and he went for a divorce, which robbed him of a lot of money. And then he moved to Cyprus and he had all his money in the bank, £500,000, I think it was, right? So quite a bit of money. And then the Cypriot government or the banks, they wanted to do something. I think there was a lot of Russian influence in Cyprus and dodginess going on. And so for quite unlawfully, I think, but they confiscated everyone's money. Anyone who had over 100,000, which is where the 85,000 protection comes in, anything over 100,000 in people's banks, they took. So they took basically all of his money. And then he spiraled into depression and put on weight and all sorts of things. And I was telling my mum about, you know, one of your favorite quotes, and you always list it as one of my favorite books, although I think it's probably more of yours, The Man's Search for Meaning, where the last of the human freedoms is the ability to choose one's response in any given situation. And so, you know, even though that was devastating for my mum's cousin, and this is going to be devastating for you tomorrow, it is, you know, somewhat you can, to some degree, I know it doesn't feel like normal, but like to choose that response and choose, where do I focus my attention? Is it on the fact that we've had 16 and a half great years and they've grown up, taught my children responsibility? And also, it's not great seeing someone you love suffer. And this is also where I was with my dad, even though I feel like the last 2-3 years, I think his heart, basically he had heart failure. And I think it should have been more obvious to the doctors for sure, but certainly also for myself. And, you know, maybe I'm going into that stage at the moment where you're kicking yourself saying, oh, you know, because he was trying and he was always tired and he was always struggling. And then I was thinking, well, now at least he's not struggling, he's at peace. But on the flip side, I think, well, if we'd known something about it earlier, could we have done anything? And reality is probably not, because he was his own person and he would also not listen to me as much as I'd like. And so if there was a way out of it that the doctors weren't able to do and I was able to help him with, he wouldn't have listened anyway. So I guess my consolation, and it may be for you, is that person or that dog or whatever is at peace. And also, assuming you subscribe to that, but also focus on, you know, the joy and the gifts. I mean, I was a little bit emotional earlier because I just dropped my mum off. So we've just driven back from Brighton today. My mum has been with my sister for the last few days and I've left her by herself in the old house. But I still feel like he's there because nothing's changed, right? Because the chair's still there. The slipper's there. Everything's there. And so it's not reality yet. I think, like, if and when we move my mum out, that's going to be really, really hard. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, it's, you know, focus on, it's hard to be cognizantly aware of where you're going to focus. But when you go through that grief, and like you said, in that letting go bit that's behind you on the shelf, where David Hawkins talks about the intense grief might only last 10, 15, 20 minutes. So allow that to come in and actually bring those tears to you. So whether that's, you know, watching, like, not maybe tomorrow or next week, but maybe in a, you know, a few weeks or a month's time, and you want to watch Marley and Me and come to tears, or you know I was coming to tears almost the other day at watching, well, a couple of things actually, but one, I was watching Giannis Antetokounmpo, who's the Greek freak, the NBA basketball player. I don't know,
I saw it, documentary on Prime. Yeah.
Okay, so that was, I think in the second half, he talks about the loss of his father a bit more. And it's all about family. And he's very Greek, even though he's obviously Nigerian, but he was born in Greece. And that Greek way of philodemos that they talk about, which is this hospitality, this connection. And that was bringing tears to my eyes because, you know, obviously his dad got to see him, like, succeed in that way and gave up everything, right? Gave up everything for his children. And so that brought me emotional. And then I was watching the Stacey Solomon clear out your house or clear out your gutter. And the last episode was a single father. He had a 2- and a 4-year-old. He lost his wife a couple of years earlier to cancer or something. And then I was telling my sister about that. And she was like, no, I don't want to hear anymore. I'm coming to tears now, just because he was so emotional when they changed the house up for him.
That brings up the other quote, though. So it's better, you know, grief is the price to pay for love. But the other is, it's better to have loved and lost than to have never lost at all. And certainly, you know, tomorrow's going to be really difficult for us and our family, but I'd rather have had the 16 and a half years than not. And that's what we have to, that's the price we pay for it, right? So I hope we're doing, as you say, is maybe not everyone would agree with putting a dog down and letting them go naturally, but dogs are clean animals. It'd be my justification. And he can't, he's incontinent. He can't lift his back legs. He can't go anywhere without me carrying him. He's completely immobile. And without senses as well, I just don't think there's an experience for him, and we want to do the right thing. So tomorrow is going to be a tough day, and I'm sorry for the listeners. This isn't probably the most upbeat of shows, but that's not always the aim of them. It's about reflection and you and I having a conversation to help each other through good times and the bad, right? And I appreciate you listening to me today, Harry, and I take away everything that you've said, and thank you for the reminders. And here's the guy. I don't know if you can see it on camera. I'll give you a little picture of the boy. Can you see that there? Anyone watching on video? There we go. Probably got a couple of him. I'll show you how little we've had him since. So here's my my daughter. That's when he's a bit smaller. She's 14 now. So yeah, we've had him all the way through. That's my, maybe he's with both of them.
Is this those faces, the dog's faces, like, it's just, it's it, like, it, you can get so much emotion and feeling, even though it doesn't look like they've changed the feature that much. There's something that you can get from seeing their faces. It's, they're so cute.
Well, you made me smile. I didn't come into the call smiling necessarily. I'm smiling now because they're good memories. They're good memories. And we're going to do, I'm not keeping you too late today because we're going to do like a, sounds awful, like a green, almost like a green mile meal, really. We're going to do a special little final meal for him. They've got some bone marrow and I went to Dart's farm and got him a steak. And I don't know, maybe it's all a bit silly, but we're trying to do what we can for his final final meal. So, yeah.
I think that that's the hard thing as well, because you know it's happening. You know it's going to, like, so at least, I guess in my case, it was kind of sudden. You don't know, you know, in both your father's case and in Buster's case, it's that journey, that step to the inevitable. And I think this was something I was thinking about earlier, and whether that was something to talk about or not. Like, you know, it's like knowing the moment you're going to die. Would you want to know that? And I guess my answer to that would probably be no.
I think mine would be a no. I think so. I mean, it's going to be one of those years. I mean, Saturday now, I'm back. I was about to see my dad on Saturday, back again this weekend. You know, that's the next thing. Got to now, because there's an level of inevitability about that situation. He listens and watches the show, so he knows that as well. We're obviously hoping that's as far away in the distance as possible, but we've also got to face reality that it's going to come. So trying to maximize my time with him.
If you do know, because I was thinking about this, let's say, you know, I live to 200 years old, right? But then in that final year, right, you knew it was the end because, you know, certain telltale signs, and that's just the way that humans evolve, let's say, that, okay, a year in, then it gives your scattered family from around the world or around the galaxy by then or whatever it might be, that final year to come and spend time. I think my brother-in-law, his sister, she was talking, I mean, she moved from Australia, left her family, because they moved there 15 years ago. So she moved back for 9 months about a year and a half ago when they thought last year was going to be the end for my brother-in-law's mum. And then she went back to Australia and then she came back literally the morning that it all happened, I think. But the thing is, she got 9 months back that, you know, had her mum, you know, died suddenly in a car crash or something, she wouldn't have got. So even though it's terrible to see that person suffer and really hard for everyone involved knowing it's coming to the end, at least you've got that opportunity. I mean, one of the things that
you're absolutely right. I mean, look, I wouldn't be going back every weekend I can for a start if I knew there was nothing wrong. And that sounds terrible, but you don't. You live your life, right?
Every time you see that person, I do remember hearing this actually from either Jim Rowan or Og Mandino or someone like that. He said, like, I want you to go and have an interaction with these people that you really are fond with. And I want you to think that you know a secret that they don't know. And that secret is that later that evening, they're going to die. How are you going to be with that person? And that really struck me when I heard that. And I heard it years ago. I was thinking, wow, I mean, it's hard to do that. You can't do that with everybody. You can't do that all the time. It's just too emotionally. But the idea being that you don't know the last time you're going to speak to. I didn't know, you know, the last conversation I had with my dad was arguing about he wanted me to buy sausages for Christmas dinner. Obviously, I don't eat sausages, but for like the others, he was thinking about food. And I was thinking, look, I don't need to get sausages. They've got sorted food. And so, you know, we were getting a bit annoyed with each other. You know, that's fine. You know, but, you know, obviously, had you known it's the last time I was going to speak to him, it may have been a different conversation.
I think another thing we can reflect upon is a different kind of question where, you know, you and I do a lot of stuff about goal setting and objective setting and finding, you know, purpose and all these things. And I think we've said it on the show before, but the reality is that we have all these goals, but for those that are really sick, they only have one. You know, if you were suddenly told today that you had a debilitating illness that was going to take your life, actually all your goals narrow into one, which is, I just hope I can get better, or I hope I can do this. You really narrows your focus. And that's when it, you know, brings a lot of stuff into context. I think that the example you've given is a great way to look at things. If people are listening to this and it encourages just one person to go and have a positive conversation for someone with that mindset, it can only be a good thing, right? Because hopefully they don't know that secret. So go and have a positive conversation. Don't you know, hold on to things that aren't going to add any value to anybody. don't hold on to the negativity, let it go. Using the book on my shelf, you say, you know, the attachment to that negative feeling, and we can put this in so many contexts, different contexts, but the idea being, if we're angry with someone, it just makes us feel angry. The emotions are all with us, not with the individual you're angry at. If you don't forgive someone, you're attached to not forgiving somebody or feeling a certain way about somebody that's negative, the individual you're feeling that about doesn't impact them. It only impacts the person that's, you know, has that feeling inside them. If you let it go, you know, it just makes everything go away. Either way, it doesn't impact the other individual really. But it's there's a lot to be said for letting go of attachment and other things, which we've talked about a lot on previous episodes. But
I think, all the things we talk about in this podcast, or life in general, I think it all comes down to a few fundamental truths about non-attachment, about, you know, focusing on the now, you know, about, you know, being mindful of one's thoughts. It's all the same teachings, whether it's different religions, different personal development, stoicism. There's very similarity. There's huge similarities across all of them. And it's pulling those commonalities and going, well, actually, if a billion people over here think this, and a billion people over here think this, and people have been thinking this since 5,000 years ago, maybe there's something we can learn from that and listen to it.
I agree. But we're complex. Humans are complex, and we need constant reminders. That's the thing, because we naturally want to attach to ourselves. We naturally want to fight for survival and do the things that don't always help us. And that's why this show, you know, you and I know the answers, but we still help each other by reminding the other. And I think that's really important. I mean, you know, you've written books on it, and yet you still sometimes fall foul of that social bucket, the things that you need to do. I certainly fall foul of just certain things in my life that don't help me either. So, you know, the idea of when you say yes to something, what you say no to. Every time I say yes to working till, you know, 1 a.m. in the morning, I'm saying no to being with my family, and actually I'm doing it the wrong way around. And so, I mean, you know, we all fall foul of these things, and these shows and these conversations remind us of a better way. And yeah, I think that's a good thing.
I think it's going to be a tough day tomorrow and tough week in general. Obviously this too shall pass, you'll get through it. But I guess, you know, just, you know, be there for Buster, be there for, you know, the kids, all of that. And, you know, allow yourself that time as well and that space to have the emotions that you need to have both now and in the future, I think is all I would say. And, you know,
I do know the answer to your question. He won't be here this time tomorrow. So, I'll do that. RYP, Buster. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you jumping on the course to change direction of what we're going to talk about today. Quite frankly, I couldn't have discussed anything else. I don't think I wouldn't have been in the right mindset. So I appreciate it. It's been helpful. It's been good. Sorry, listeners, if you're hearing another show about loss and whatever else I'm dealing with it. But, you know, this is real life, right? This is real life.
These experiences, the life is about connection with other people and animals and dogs and nature and everything else. And, you know, these experiences do come to a natural conclusion, but as you say, grief is the price you pay for love, and it's better to have loved and lost than not loved at all. And I think the positive that people can take out from this conversation is that we, whether it's humans or animals, we impact other people beyond ways we can possibly know, and that we should appreciate those people in our lives, those other people and things and animals in our lives. And maybe the next conversation you have, maybe go into that conversation thinking about knowing that secret about that person, and maybe don't have that argument, or give that person a little bit more space, or whatever the thing is that you need to do. As a listener, and myself included, I'll be taking this on board as well for the next couple of days. It's just, maybe think that this is the last time you get to see this person. How would you act?
And the as you mentioned, the duality of life, right? So we've got to deal with this pain tomorrow and beyond. But if I hadn't taken the risk, as it was, as a family in a new unit, of having a dog in our lives and all the things that encompasses, we've had 16 and a half years of absolute joy and bliss with him and fun times. And it's the yin and the yang that keeps us going. If everything was always good, you wouldn't know what good looked like. And if you don't take any risks, you don't get it either. So I wouldn't change a thing. But yeah, it's going to make tomorrow difficult. But
life only gives you what you can handle as well. So, you know, life knows, or universe knows, to give you what you can handle. All right. Well, nice to speak, and I wish you all the best for tomorrow, and much love to the family and, of course, to Buster.
Good man. Thanks, listeners, for joining us for, yeah, a tougher one for me today, but appreciate you tuning in. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to the Mindful Past podcast with Nick Day and Harry Kalymnos.
We hope you found our discussions insightful, and hopefully you've gained some valuable takeaways to support you on your own journey.
Please leave us a review on your preferred podcast platform and share an episode that resonates with you with a friend or family member who may also find it valuable.
Please also don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to ensure you never miss a future episode. And in the meantime, we'll continue exploring Mindful Path topics to provide you with more insights and more ideas to support you on your personal growth journey.
Thank you for your support, and look out for the next episode of the Mindful Path podcast dropping soon.